Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and New York City's newest candidate is with us now, former governor and state attorney general Eliot Spitzer, who announced his run for city comptroller last night. Governor, welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you. Always a pleasure to chat with you.
Are you and your family ready for the tabloid covers? I won't repeat them, but right. I'm sure you saw the Post and Daily News and AM New York headlines today.
Tabloids are part of New York politics. This is not... a process for the faint of heart. And yes, as a family, we made this decision, and we will weather the storm and move forward. This is part of politics. It's not the part that you and I necessarily love to focus on, chat about, but it's the substance matters the most and ultimately is what prevails.
I see your daughters are 19 and 23 now. Is it fair to them for you to reenter politics and see all these references staring them and their friends in the face from every newsstand?
Well, here's the reality, and obviously I've had this conversation with them, and by and large I keep those conversations to ourselves, of course, but I think they are much more mature than they were when I was younger and entering politics, and it had a lesser impact on them when they were newborns and such. But they are now mature. They're grown-ups. They understand the world. They have seen these issues discussed. We have discussed them, and so this was a decision made as a family, and we'll go forward with it.
By re-entering politics, you're asking for forgiveness in a way you didn't have to by being a TV host. I never asked you about any of this stuff when you came on when you're working for CNN or
right.
Current TV. Will you put it into words for the voters listening right now?
Sure.
What are you asking forgiveness for and from whom?
I'm asking forgiveness from them for my indiscretions, my violations of trust. I erred. I have acknowledged that. I've said it repeatedly and not shied from it. I looked them in the eye when I resigned and said, this is what I did was wrong, hence I'm resigning. There is some degree of accountability, perhaps not sufficient for some, but some degree of accountability that flowed from that. I've asked for the principle of accountability to be something we focus on, and I will try to hold myself to that standard. Whether 5 years of reflection and focusing elsewhere is enough for voters, only voters will tell me. I've said repeatedly, whether it was 12 citizens in a jury box when I was a prosecutor, voters when I was running for office, I have complete faith in the public to render a decision. And if it's affirmative, negative, the voters and citizens will render that decision, and that is what I've asked for and what I will receive, positive or negative.
You know, to some people, the worst of what you did, which actually moves it from a personal transgression to a professional and political one, was that not that you hired prostitutes as governor, but that you had a record of cracking down on the trade and increasing penalties for Johns, making you a hypocrite on a policy level. What would you say to that concern?
I think it's a fair argument, and again, without wading back into that, we enforced the law when I was attorney general. We enforced it when I was governor. We passed laws that we believed were fair and appropriate, and I have paid a price that I will ask others to determine whether they think is appropriate or not. And that is the most I can say. I do not disagree with the arguments that have been made. I've never asked that they be disregarded. I've simply said at this point, 5 years has been a period of time during which time I've done and focused on other things. And I ask the public for an opportunity to serve once again.
Did you know that the Libertarian Party candidate for controller is Kristen Davis, the madam who spent time in jail for providing you with prostitutes?
Well, I'm not sure that those facts are correct, but again, I'm not going to dignify her claims, and I think they've been roundly shown not to be accurate in any way, shape, or form. But putting that aside,
not accurate that she had involvement in that.
That's correct. But put that aside. I'm focusing right now on making an affirmative argument to the public about why the skills that I brought to the Attorney General's office, that I brought to the Governor's office, what I did in terms of Wall Street, the environment, civil rights, and on and on. I don't want to belabor that point, but why the issues we focused upon and the change we effectuated when I was Attorney General, what we did to that office in terms of re-energizing it, re-envisioning it, is something that could and should be done to the Controller's office. And I think that is something that would benefit the city, would benefit the public here. And that is the suggestion I'm making, and it is why I've entered this race. And if the public supports it, then I would hope they would vote for me.
So why do you want to be controller?
It is a position that has tremendous opportunity. There are three major buckets. The first is the audit function, and that sounds tedious and green eye shades, but it's not measuring whether the paperclips got delivered that you paid for. It is whether the policies we're paying for are working. Are we getting the returns in terms of increased graduation rates, in terms of reading and math literacy that we are paying for in our school system, in terms of infrastructure, in terms of healthcare delivery, substantive policy audits to determine what works and what doesn't work, which then, of course, has an enormous impact on where we spend money. There is also the traditional audit function. The second area is oversight of the pensions and ensuring not only that we are safeguarding the enormous reservoirs of capital that will flow to those who've earned these pensions for their retirement, but also using the equity stake that we control as a means of control of corporate governance. And this is not politics. This is not trying to play politics in corporate America. This is shareholders control corporations. If shareholders abdicate, passive institutional investors lead to bad governance, and that is to a great extent why we had the cataclysm of 08. And the third area is oversight of the budget, just making sure that the revenues are there, that we're spending the money wisely. These are major important areas that I hope the public feels, given where I've been in private sector, public sector, I can do something useful.
Elliot Spitzer with us on WNYC, now running for New York City Comptroller. As Attorney General, you had the nickname the Sheriff of Wall Street. As Comptroller, as you were just describing, you would be in charge of the huge New York City pension funds. Would your plan be to be an active shareholder to bring about corporate change? It sounds like in general, you would want to at least consider using it that way, but can you name any specific ways, name maybe three ways that you would use that leverage that you could identify right now?
Sure. I'll give you a couple examples. One is the debate, and I mentioned this one because it got a fair bit of attention, over whether or not the CEO and the board chair position should reside in one person or not. I believe as a matter of sound corporate principles, you should have a separate CEO and a separate board chair. The argument, gee, Jamie Dimon's a good CEO, therefore we don't want to separate. I said, look, George Washington was a great president. We did not eliminate checks and balances, even though we thought he was a great president. Structural checks on decision making are important in corporate governance as well as in the democratic arena. That is one. A second area that I would focus upon, I think, is poison pills, which are, I think, damaging, significantly damaging to shareholder power, the capacity of shareholders to use their control and their ownership of companies to bring in the right directors and also get takeovers favorable or unfavorable to vote accordingly. The third would be staggered boards, which again is another design effort to limit shareholder power. These are things that are technical, that relate to corporate governance, that are important in terms of permitting shareholders once again to have their say so that we bring corporations back into line and an alignment of power between the CEO and shareholders.
Of course, the first job of the comptroller with respect to the pension funds is to make as much money as you can for the retirees and the taxpayers who subsidize them, right?
I would caveat that only by saying, look, you don't want to do it in a way that's either unethical or will ultimately degrade the marketplace. In other words, a pension fund, as along with most of the mutual funds, is so big that it owns the market, by which what people mean is you own so many different stocks across a broad array that if you permit practices to continue that ultimately will degrade the quality of the marketplace and lead to a crash, you may have a momentary uptick because you've done something that's clever, but long-term, you're going to lose. In other words, you're a long-term investor, and therefore your interest and your fiduciary duty in getting those returns is to ensuring that the companies in which you've invested do, in fact, have good, sound corporate governance, which is why the matters, the three examples I gave you, are important to the shareholders and to those who will receive the pensions.
How about beyond corporate governance issues to other kinds of social issues? Like there are people who call on the pension funds not to invest in tobacco companies. Maybe they already don't do that. I'm not sure.
Right.
Or fracking or whatever the thing may be. Is that an area that you would consider?
Yes. And in fact, I wrote an article, and these are issues I've been writing about for a number of years. I wrote an article right after the horrific shooting up in Connecticut, and I said that the pension funds, state, city, municipal, should look to see if they are in fact investors in Cerberus, which was the private equity fund that owned the company that had produced the AR-15s. And it turns out they were, and so quite rightly, a number of those public pension funds said, we will sell our shares. We want you, Cerberus, not to invest in this. And the consequence was the company, I think, was ultimately taken private, which doesn't necessarily solve the problem. But yes, there are parameters in terms of moral appropriateness for investing. Those are tricky lines to define. But I think the crowning achievement in that domain, back when I was in college, the significant movement, and it's one that many, many folks participated in, was the effort to get university endowments not to invest in companies that had investments in South Africa when South Africa was an apartheid regime. And that sort of moral suasion and economic pressure contributed to some extent to the end of apartheid in South Africa. So yes, there are certain areas where those principles can and should be applied. They're tough because those are tough decisions sometimes, but certainly there are also decisions in that regard that are reasonably clear.
You told the Times yesterday that you had broadened the scope of the Office of Comptroller from its conventional monetary role, even with the breadth we've just been discussing, to also auditing for effectiveness
right. In
all kinds of city agencies. You gave high school graduation rates as an example.
Right.
Why would that be in your job description?
Well, because, not to be circular, it's in the city charter. In other words, the city charter gives that power to the comptroller, and the courts have interpreted the audit power of the comptroller to expand and to that type of substantive conversation. In other words, the audit function does not, as I say, limit itself just to the issue of how many paperclips have been delivered. It extends to the more comprehensive and, frankly, equally important issue of, are the investments we're making in this educational theory or in that healthcare delivery system, are they actually accomplishing the result we are seeking?
And we've had active controllers before,
sure,
using the office to keep their eye on policy, not just money, by choosing what to audit. I think John Liu's a controller like that. Elizabeth Holtzman was a controller
right. Like
that. Do you have role models for this?
Well, look, I don't want to single out any of my predecessors. I would say that Liz Holtzman is somebody whom at many levels I thought was a stupendous public servant. I think we all remember the tape. I think it was Abscam, or one of the undercover operations the FBI ran where the bad guy said, "Oh, forget Liz Holtzman, you'll never be able to get to her. She's too pure." You know, Liz had, some great attributes, and she is somebody whom I would look to, whom I would speak with, and get guidance from. Sure, I think there are many who have been in this position who would be role models.
Did you use graduation rates as an example purposefully? Mayor Bloomberg has been boasting about improving them as part of his legacy, especially at the smaller high schools that he championed. Are you being critical of him by using that example?
No, I think that there has been some movement in that regard. I used it first and foremost, just to be clear, because it's an example of a policy which people understand, where a metric has been created, and you can, in fact, try to determine whether or not the investment is resulting in the outcome you want. You could choose many others, of course. The educational investments matter enormously to me, partly because when I was governor, in the aftermath of the CFE decision, we fully funded whatever that means means different things to different people, of course, but what it meant to the court, we fully funded New York City's educational program, which meant an uptick in several billions of dollars every year in spending, which was not only the right thing to do, but important. But as I said at the time, and I believe just as deeply now, spending the money is the easy part. Making sure you're doing it wisely is the much more difficult part. And so following through, and the issues of, do smaller class sizes generate better results? Do the tests actually measure what we are hoping to measure? Graduation rates is an easy one. I think we all get that as a metric, and so that's why those are the examples I use.
So running for controller, you're challenging Manhattan Borough President Scott Stringer, who was considered a shoo-in
right. Until
last night. He has already issued a statement emphasizing his integrity and his record of fighting for the middle class. He will put up a fight.
Right.
Why try to push Scott Stringer aside?
Well, I've never viewed politics as pushing anybody else aside. I've had primaries in races for every office I ran for attorney general, for governor. Primaries are competition. We believe in competition. It raises the level of performance, whether it's in the private sector or in government. And I believe in it. This will not be – I'm not going to speak ill of Scott. He's a friend. He's been in government for 20 or so years. I respect that. This is a choice that the public will have. Choices are good. And I will present my record as attorney general, governor, as a prosecutor in the private sector, as a teacher, writer. I have a book coming out next Tuesday. All of these are facets of my career that the public will look at, weigh, and consider, and make a determination.
And by the way, listeners, we will have Scott Stringer on tomorrow for a candidate interview. I read that you will use your independent wealth to finance your campaign, and you won't take campaign donations. Mr. Stringer is already criticizing you for doing that, which means not participating in the city's campaign finance system with its public matching funds that encourage small donations.
Right.
He calls it using your family's fortune to buy personal redemption. What's your response?
Well, look, I'm not going to respond to a kind of a petulant comment by Scott. The reality is that we're going to end up spending probably about the same amount of money. He'll be spending your money. I'll be spending my own money. That's all. I have said repeatedly that the idea in a campaign is to permit the voters to make an informed judgment based upon the merits of the candidates. And I hope that I spend and have the capacity to be heard. That's all. For the public to understand my record, what I've done, no more, no less. Then it will be a thoughtful decision process by the voters. And that's, you know, what we would hope this would be in a democratic process.
If you're not in the campaign finance system, then you're not required to take part in the broadcast debates that the campaign finance board sponsors. Full disclosure, I will be a questioner in the
right.
WNYC New York One controller
right.
primary debate on August 12th. Will you commit to debating Scott Stringer that night right now?
Absolutely. The only caveat is I've got to get my petitions on. And if I get my petitions done and I'm a candidate and I'm actually on the ballot, you bet I will be there. I have never said no to a debate. And so I guess if I turn the question on you, if I don't get my petitions on, do I still get to show up?
No. but I gather that's not going to be a problem, or do you think that's going to be a close call to do that by Thursday?
Look, it is Monday at about 20 of 11, and I should be out in the street gathering petitions, but I thoroughly enjoy talking to you, so never say no to that opportunity. Look, it's going to be a tough burden. I will be out there in the street shortly. We will be asking folks to sign the petition. A petition to get somebody on the ballot, of course, doesn't mean you're going to vote for them or you endorse them. It means you want them to be on the ballot so you can then choose. And, yeah, it's going to be hard. We need 3,750 petitions, and not every one that is signed, not every signature is good for a bunch of different reasons. And so we'll have to get more than that, and we're going to work at it.
Are you endorsing in this year's mayoral race?
No, I think I will let leave that arena and the excitement there to itself at this point and try to focus on what my current obligation is, which is to explain to the public why I would like to work for them as a controller.
Do you think that your entry into this race complicates Anthony Weiner's campaign, or that his complicates yours? I mean, I'll just be honest. A female New York Democrat suggested to me last night that if you and Anthony Weiner are elected mayor and controller on the same day, New York, for her, would be an embarrassment and a laughingstock. What would you say to that voter?
I'm going to ask that folks vote for whomever they wish to vote for, and I like to think that I've got a record of substantive accomplishment, thoughtful decision-making on the range of issues that are relevant to this office. And if folks agree with that, that's great, and I will ask them for their support. I'm not going to, you know, as they say, comment about the mayor's race or any other candidate in that race and how this will march forward.
Anything you want to say to the voters? 60 seconds, open soapbox.
Merely that I hope they look at my record. They recognize that it's been 5 years since I resigned. I have done a lot teaching, writing, taught at CCNY, have hosted on TV shows, all of which was interesting, fascinating. I was able to participate in the debate, but nothing to me has been as rewarding as public service. And I hope the public appreciates that I worked my heart and soul out for them as a prosecutor, as attorney general. I think we were significantly ahead of the curve on tough issues from immigration. You know, take the small issue of driver's licenses for the undocumented immigrants, where the heavens opened and descended upon me when I suggested that as governor in 2007. It has now become the commonplace in the law of the land. And so we were ahead on the issues of that magnitude to Wall Street, to the environment. And I think if people would think about that and would like to see that vigor and energy in the controller's office, I'd be honored to serve, and I'll ask for their support.
Former Governor and Attorney General Eliot Spitzer, now running for New York City Controller. Thank you very much for coming on this first day of your campaign. We'll talk.
Thank you. Look forward to it.